to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show. It is Saturday, the 2nd of May. We are already having just a completely nutso day out here. And I'm going to start off here by a little bit of an apology. I am not as well prepared for today's show as I normally like to be. Normally, I like to have a big little stack of, you know, notes and papers and things and all that kind of thing that we work through. And unfortunately, last night we had a blackout. And we just got the electricity back literally moments before the top of the hour, and we're still trying to spin up all the equipment here to get everything running. So it's probably going to be a little bit more random today in terms of covering the news and various stories. And this isn't a time, this is a day when really those of you who like to call, I could really use your help. So pick up the phone and call us at 800-259-9231. That's 800-259-9231. And Matt is in the control room. He's waiting to grab the phone here and put you on the air. Subjects I'd like to talk about, first of all, the corporate media is still pushing the flying pig flu. They're out there saying, well, you know, yes, it's not as serious as we thought, and it's not as serious as regular flu, but you ought to be worried anywhere. And they're just sending people, and the local pharmacies are already reporting they're out of the face masks. People are stocking up on those, and yes, my wife and I did as well back when it looked like this might really be a problem. You know, they're still continuing to push that. And, of course, now the question is, what is it they're using this flu story to distract us from? What is happening elsewhere they're not paying attention to? And, of course, one of those stories, of course, is the blowout from the dropping of spy charges against former AIPAC officials, Rosen and Wiseman, and the linkage to Calamity Jane Harmon. That continues to be a story, certainly on the blogosphere. In fact, for the hour before this show, I was a guest on another radio show, and my wife was laughing at me because I'm standing in the kitchen, completely blacked out. I've got a flashlight in one hand and the only working phone in the house in the other, and I'm trying to do this very sage commentary on the situation with another radio show. But we have our power back here. And I went out and I looked at the guys working on the wiring, and I think some of this wiring in our neighborhood goes back to like World War II. And it has not been maintained, not just here in Hawaii. We're seeing, you know, there's this wonderful term, deferred maintenance, which means we don't got the money to fix it now, so put a Band-Aid on it. And I think all that deferred maintenance is going to start coming back to bite our country. And I remember in the USSR, in the months before that fell apart, blackouts became more common, systems breaking down, trains not working reliably anymore. It all began to sort of come apart there because the reliability of the infrastructure was compromised by years of neglect. And I think we're starting to see that here because we're definitely seeing more power failures now than we did even just short a time as 2-3 years ago. Anyway, to get back to the situation here with the flu, not quite a pandemic, but we're going to make you look anyway. We've been looking at this issue of what are they distracting us from? AIPAC Gate, the spies, Jane Harmon, the economy, the torture scandal. Those are all big issues. But there's an interesting possibility here, and that is that the flu pandemic hysteria being manufactured in the news may well have been intended to be a distraction for something that wound up not happening at all. We're starting to see some stories, and admittedly, one of them comes from Debka, which is not always a reliable source of information. Some of the stuff they have is good. Some of it is very obviously biased and disinformation. It is an Israeli, a known Israeli disinformation site. But I'm getting this from other sources as well. And the story goes like this. Before Israel can bomb Iran's nuclear facilities, they have to deal with the fact that Iran has a very modern air force. So the story is going that back about the same time we were starting to see the news media just go totally overboard with this pandemic, there was an air show in Iran where for this one day, all of Iran's best warplanes are sort of collected together in one place so the Iranian people can go, ooh, ah, look at all the pretty aluminum there. And the story is that Israel was getting ready to do a sneak surprise attack on the air show, which would, of course, killed a lot of civilians, I might point out here. But that Russia saw what Israel was getting ready to do at their airfields and sent a timely warning to Iran. And once the element of surprise was lost, Israel pulled the plug on the project. The idea, if this attack had gone forward, was that Iran would be left without most of their air force. They'd be a sitting duck to subsequent Israeli attacks on their power station. So that's the story that we're getting out of some of these other sources, and I don't have a confirmation on it yet. It's hard to prove a negative. But it would make sense that so much effort was put into creating this global hysteria over what really amounts to a non-existent threat. Because the reality is they're talking about there's 600 confirmed cases of the flying pig flu, or whatever they're calling it. Everybody's complaining, oh, don't call it this, don't call it that. Israel wants us to call it the Mexican flu. I refuse. It stays the flying pig flu. But they did put a lot of effort into it, and I know there's a lot of people out there who are saying, oh, come on, the whole media wouldn't go along with this kind of a thing. Yeah, they would. Look back at the run-up to the war in Iraq and all the stuff we were being fed about, you know, what a monster Saddam was. He loved to kill people with his bare hands. He did this. He did that. You know, he would, you know, tap dance barefoot on shag carpeting on Sunday, the sinner that he was. And there's a gentleman by the name of Viktor Ostrovsky. And he is a former Mossad agent. He's an artist now. He actually has a gallery. He does paintings and not the cheap crap stuff that the Israeli spies are trying to sell door to door. But Viktor's paintings are really very nice, very obviously come from deep within his soul. And he's having a good time with that. But he's also authored a couple of books. By Way of Deception was the first one. And his more recent book is The Other Side of Deception. And in the book, The Other Side of Deception, basically Viktor lays out how the Mossad around the world activated all of their assets in the media, which are considerable, to basically start putting out this constant propaganda about what a monster Saddam Hussein was. And it was just unrelenting to just sell this idea that, it, you know, never mind that we're committing an unprovoked act of aggression against an innocent country, that bastard Saddam had it coming. I think you can still say bastard on the radio. If I can't, oops, I'm sorry. So, yeah, it does happen. The media is controlled sufficiently by Israel, by Israeli interests, by the U.S. government, by corporations. You're not going to get accurate and objective information from them. You're going to get spin and deception and lies, and the rest is advertising. Even a lot of what you see on what are purported to be news programs are actually covert forms of advertising. And you need to be aware that that's what's going on there. Years ago when I was working in Los Angeles, it was a very common practice for ad agencies to go out and actually produce a news segment on their client's product. They'd find something that they could turn into a news story about, the manufacturer claims this thing will do all this wonderful stuff. Will it really? And they'd literally cut it together as if it was a news story. And they'd take it around all the TV station news departments. And they'd schmooze the news manager, and they'd hand him the tape. And news departments, even back then, had tight budgets. They were grateful for any filler that they could put on the air if they didn't have hard news. And that's why sometimes you'll see stuff in the news, and you just see, why are they reporting this? Well, they're reporting it because somebody gave it to them. And in some cases, paid them to put it on the air. So that's the way the news works. Now, getting back here to this flying pig flu. What we are seeing right now today before us is a repeat of the 1976 swine flu. Same thing, media hype, all kinds of hysteria, and it turned out the disease was a non-starter. But they sold a lot of vaccine. The vaccine killed a lot of people. So you've got to be careful. We're going to take a break here for some commercials. We will be back after these words from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Once again, our phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. We're talking about the flu pandemic that never really was. It is a repeat of what we went through back in 1976, which made the pharmaceutical companies obscene profits, scared the heck out of the American people, and killed about 50 of them from the vaccine. The flu itself only killed one person, maybe. Now, yes, there have been deaths from this current flu, but remember, to keep it in perspective, regular flu that does not get headlines kills 30,000 people around the world every year. 30,000 people. We have only 600 people who've actually got this flu. The actual number of deaths is still in double digits. And yet, this was the big, huge story all over the corporate media this last week. And you have to ask why. You have to ask why. Getting at the why. What are we being distracted from? An aborted attack by Israel against Iran. That's one story floating around. Certainly, the torture scandal. And we're beginning to find out more and more information about yet another secret American torture factory in Poland. We haven't seen the bottom of that story. And then, of course, AIPAC starts tomorrow, and they're probably going to have a huge, huge party because their boys Rosen and Weissman got off the hook. You know, they dodged a bullet. They're free people. Of course, their partner in crime, the American side, he's still in jail. He's in jail for 12 years. He got 12 years for the same crime, essentially, that Rosen and Weissman just took a walk on. And one of the things that I think we need to look at very, very, very carefully is exactly why it happened here and now. That we know that Steve Weiss wrote the original article in Congressional Quarterly that blew the whistle on these phone taps that proved Calamity Jane Harmon entered into a conspiracy to obstruct justice in an espionage case at the Department of Justice. We know there was an investigation into Jane herself that was blocked by President Bush, who needed her to sort of be looking really good and honorable because she was going to support the warrantless surveillance on ordinary Americans. This kind of deal-making gets done all the time here. So why now? Why was this brought out now? Because the actual phone call took place quite some time ago. Why the timing? Well, what I think happened here is we have Netanyahu coming here on the 18th, and we've already seen in various newspaper reports that Netanyahu is concerned that Barack Obama might not bow deep enough and say yes, sir, often enough to Israel's liking, that Obama may say, well, I need to, you know, start pushing for this two-state solution because that's what the American people want. And, of course, Netanyahu's attitude is, you don't tell us what we're going to do. We tell you what you're going to do. Now, holding Rosen and Weissman on these potential espionage charges was a poker chip for Barack Obama that he could put into play, saying, well, look, if you go along with me so that I look good to the American people, I'll cut you some slack on Rosen and Weissman, okay? Because if that thing goes to trial, it's going to be really embarrassing for AIPAC. And yes, it's going to be embarrassing for a lot of American Congress people. But, you know, let's cut a deal here. So, Wise over at the Congressional Quarterly writes a story, outs Jane Harmon for a conspiracy to obstruct justice in the spy case. And now, all of a sudden, it becomes very, very difficult for the United States to move forward on the charges and the trials for Rosen and Weissman, because now it's going to start opening up, in the eyes of the American public, the real depth of Israel's control and influence over what is supposed to be our representative government. So the Department of Justice, and I understand that Barack Obama agreed with this decision, they said, okay, we've got to drop the case because this is going to harm us a lot more than it will harm AIPAC and Rosen and Weissman. So Rosen and Weissman get a walk for the same crime Larry Franklin got 12 years in prison for. And now, of course, Jane Harmon is saying, you know, there's no conspiracy to obstruct justice because the charges got dropped. So her little problems just walked away. And Barack Obama is going into his meeting with Netanyahu, minus what was probably going to be one of his major chips that he could play with. They may put Jonathan Pollard into the pot this time out. Pollard may actually get his release this time. But this is the way real politics is played. And it's bribery. It is blackmail. This idea that this is all honorable behavior and the rule of law and logic and rationality and the will of the people, that is just the manufactured illusion for you to cling to as you sign those tax checks. The idea that somehow you are getting a good and beneficent government and you're being taken care of in exchange for cumulatively about half of everything you ever earn. If you go through and you parcel out all the taxes you pay at all levels of government and all the hidden taxes in the products you buy, you need to understand, when you go into that store and you buy a box of whatever, about one-third of the price on that shelf are taxes and excises and fees and all of these other things. And, of course, everybody who manufactures that box of whatever and transports it and warehouses it and even the store itself, the taxes they pay are calculated into the price that is on the shelf. If you really think about it, and I worked through this exercise once, way back when we were still going over the debate over music piracy. And a common argument by the people who like to copy files was, well, those record companies, they're making so much money off of this situation. And so I went back and I broke it out. Who gets the money from a music CD you buy at the store? And, you know, the retailer gets about half, you know, and then the packager gets about half, order fulfillment, and all the rest of it. And then I calculated in all the taxes paid by all those people and came out to the rather amazing conclusion that when we produce, package, and sell a music CD in the music stores, it is the government that gets more money than anybody else. More money than the artists, more money than the music producer, more money than the record manufacturer, more money than the shipping and warehousing, more money than the retail outlet. Because the government gets a piece of everything all along the way, and they actually make more money off of our work than we do. The same is true for those of you doing wages and salaries, if you think about it. If you look at how much money is withheld from your check and then realize your employer has to pay another 22-23% tax for the privilege of hiring you, and you add that together with the taxes taken out from your check, and you'll realize the government makes more money off of your work than you do. And they sort of nurture you along with this illusion that you're getting something of value back for all of this vast, vast sums of money they're taking from the American people. And you're not. You know, the roads are falling apart. The schools are not teaching our kids. But, boy, we can sure send billions of dollars and lots of weapons over to Israel anytime they ask for it. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to wrap up on this whole espionage situation here, because I do think the AIPAC conference and Netanyahu's arrival is what forced the timing of this whole affair. There is no question that this story about Jane Harmon. It's not really a current event, but it was released at a specific time in order to force a cascading of events that led ultimately to the dropping of charges against Rosen and Wiseman. And I think in the larger scheme of things, it may have actually been counterproductive. Because of the deal made with Jane Harmon and possibly some other members of Congress, the actual charges Rosen and Wiseman were facing have a very high standard of proof and don't even really carry that much of a penalty. And the reality is that probably, especially because of all the pressure being brought to bear on members of the court and the Department of Justice, that they would probably have been acquitted anyway for the same crime that Larry Franklin went to jail for 12 years for. And had that happened, had they gone through the process of the trial and then said, okay, that's it, you know, they were acquitted in a court of law with due process, I think pretty much everybody would have forgotten about it. And it would have been a non-issue in light of so many other things that are going on. But in getting the charges dropped this way, so brazenly and openly, a week after the story about Jane Harmon's obstruction of justice, conspiracy to commit obstruction of justice, I think it's made the whole situation far more obvious to the general public. And there are a lot of very angry people out there. I'm getting emails from them even now saying that, you know, this is terrible. Apparently even people within the FBI are feeling very betrayed right now by this turn of events. So I think we've reached the point where Israel feels their control over the United States is so complete and so total that they don't have to be careful about it anymore. It's like Ariel Sharon was saying, we, the Jewish people, control America, and the Americans know it. We have the more recent story about where Ehud Olmert is bragging how he literally got George Bush to interrupt his own speech to take a phone call demanding that Condi Rice vote against her own proposal at the UN. And the White House denies the part about the speech, but it's a matter of record that Condoleezza Rice did, in fact, vote against her own proposal at the UN regarding Israel. And then more recently, we've had Avigdor Lieberman say, you know, the U.S., you know, basically will go for only those peace proposals we approve of. And they're letting their arrogance get the better of them, and it's becoming visible, and it's calling attention to itself. And that always seems to be kind of an historical repeating pattern that we see in these situations where a government of any country is being subverted by these particular interests. And it reaches a flashpoint, there's a backlash, and they skedaddle for the border and say, why us? Why us? Whoa, we're so suffering. What did we ever do? And the process begins all over again. And I think we're coming up on that point right now where Americans are becoming very much aware. Our government has been bought out from under us by AIPAC, apparently using money from Bernie Madoff's pyramid scheme. So literally, I mean, you have these pro-Israel people stealing money from the American people and then using that money to buy our Congress away from us. And Americans are realizing that's what happened. And they're getting very, very angry here. And I think there's going to be a flash point. And again, they'll skedaddle for the border and say, why us? Why us? Why does everybody hate us through the ages? Blah, 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 blah. Because of the way you treat everybody else, that's why. You know. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Thomas in Sweden. Thomas, aloha. Thank you for calling in today and saving me. Is Thomas there? I am not hearing. Oh, there you are. I am hearing you now. It's that mutant hamster in the mixer board. He is asleep on the job.
It was me. I had plugged my magic twanger froggy.
I don't want to know, but hey, look, this is not that kind of show.
No, don't you remember that when we were a kid on Saturday mornings, they had a frog would appear from somewhere and interrupt Andy Devine when he was running a kids program.
Oh, yes, yes, my goodness, I do remember that.
Magic twanger froggy.
That's right, I do remember that now. My goodness, talk about, oh, wow, that is
I'm 63 and I can still remember things. Anyway.
Well, I'm catching up with you, okay.
All right. You know, this is funny. I think this whole thing of Israel denying the two-state solution, this is a triple-double whammy, because if there's one country who has the advantage of having a two-state solution is Israel, because any day now, their Muslim population is going to outnumber the Jewish population, all right? And the second state would give them a place to say, oh, well, here's your state. Go have your state. Go vote there. Go live there. You with me on this? And I think that Netanyahu, who is like the super conservative, he's the guy who can maybe in a year or so get away with actually going for the second state thing. I mean, with Israel, you never know. There's always three, four different options.
I'm going to disagree with you here. I think Netanyahu is absolutely committed to the idea of Eretz Israel and eventually finding a way to simply remove the Arab population and put them someplace else. And I've never seen anything to basically discourage me from thinking that that is Israel's ultimate aim. Certainly the demolitions around East Jerusalem are consistent with that. Israel has wanted Jerusalem ever since they declared themselves to be Israel. Despite UN resolution after UN resolution after UN resolution saying it's a shared city, Israel treats it as if it's their own. They've already declared it the capital of Israel in defiance of the United Nations. The United States already has recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. And, you know, I don't see Israel, you know, at all wanting to give anything away. They're unable to give anything back to anybody. The whole cultural thing is everything for Israel and the rest of you just get out of the way. And, you know, ultimately, I think what Israel, when they talk about a single binational state, they're thinking like South Africa, where it doesn't matter how many Arabs there are. The Jews will basically be in charge of the government and of all policy because it is a Jewish state. And, of course, that's the sticking point that the Arabs are never going to agree to. If it's going to be a binational Jewish state, then what's really the point? You know, the Palestinians wind up being treated like the American Indians on the North American continent. And that is, for the most part, by and large, it's not very pleasant at all.
Okay, can I take up the business of Israel not being a Jewish state?
Please do.
According to the rabbis who I study the Torah with, I'm a theology student, among other things, first, the Messiah has to come back, and he says, okay, now you can move to Israel. This is if you're a Torah Jew, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what they've done just the opposite. It's like many of the last days Christians saying, well, if we blow up the world, Jesus will come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so, no,
Israel is in defiance of Yahweh's word, saying you must stay spread out through the world until I say it's okay. And I haven't heard anything from him yet.
Well, you know, I've checked my phone machine, and I'm not getting any phone calls from him either. But where this gets kind of blurry is there's also, I believe it's in the Talmud rather than the Torah, where once the people of Israel have lost 6 million of them, their souls, that is when the kingdom of Israel is supposed to be refounded. And that's why they keep pushing 6 million for the story of the Holocaust, even as Auschwitz reduces the number of people who died there by like 2.5 million. But that 6 million iconic number remains the same. And because that is their theological basis. I mean, if you ask anybody in Israel's government, is Israel the Jewish state? And they say, yes, it is. And we're here and we're getting ready to build the new temple and so forth and so on. We're going to take a break here. Thomas, stay on the line. I'd like to take you into the last segment of hour number one. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. The panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. Last segment of hour number one of our Saturday morning news wrap-up. We're on the phones with Thomas from Sweden. And, you know, Thomas, we're talking about Israel, and basically in response to your comment about maybe Netanyahu will finally agree to the two-state solution, I don't think so. We are just getting word that Israel has launched yet another military offensive into Gaza, this one with tanks and bombing aircraft. Now, Israel is claiming that Palestinians fired three mortar shells into Israel. As usual, the mortar shells hit absolutely nothing but dirt. No damage, no injuries, nothing. But on the basis of these three mortar shells, and nobody knows who actually did fire them, Israel, apparently already prepared to go, has just gone right back into Gaza with tanks and bulldozers. They're attacking Palestinian farmers. And again, they're carrying out aerial bombing raids along the border with Egypt to supposedly cut off the tunnels through which the Gazans are getting pretty much anything that they can to eat and so forth and so on. What Israel is doing in Gaza is they're trying to starve the Palestinians out. They're trying to make them so hungry and thirsty that they will gratefully accept whatever Israel offers as a deal to let them have something to eat. And you know what this reminds me of? Is the Warsaw Ghetto. When the Nazis did exactly the same thing to the Warsaw Ghetto, they cut off all communication. There, you know, people couldn't get any food in there. They couldn't get any supplies. They couldn't get any whatever. And finally reached the point where the Nazis would stand there with jars of marmalade to lure at least the children out of the ghetto and into the slave labor camps. And, you know, Israel wants that strip of land. It's not only very expensive or very valuable beachfront property that could be developed, but it's sitting over a lot of natural gas resources that technically belong to the Palestinians that Israel, you know, wants to basically have for its own use. They want the Gaza Strip. And here's the real important part. Back before his stroke, Ariel Sharon made this little deal with the world. He said, we are going to withdraw from Gaza and let the Palestinians have that and they can have it and that's their little turf. And in exchange, you will turn a blind eye as we start building settlements in the West Bank. And when that deal came down, I predicted that as soon as the settlements in the West Bank were a fact on the ground and could not be taken back, that Israel would find some excuse to go back into Gaza and start working on cleaning that out. Israel does not want a binational state. It is a very polite way of saying we reject the idea of a second state for Palestine. That's been the problem all along. The UN partition plan that was supposed to settle this whole issue of a Jewish homeland created two states, Israel and Palestine. It was Israel that rejected the United Nations partition plan, as they have rejected pretty much everything else the United Nations has ever said. And David Ben-Gurion basically went out and said, I declare Israel to be in existence today. 24 hours later, Harry Truman recognized the new state of Israel under the prodding of Chaim Weizmann. And from that day to this, Israel has had this attitude of, we have a right to exist, but Palestine does not. And the other Arab nations and the region said, well, if you're not going to acknowledge that the Palestinians have a right to exist, we're not going to acknowledge that you have a right to exist. And that has been the root cause of the problems from that day to this. Israel refuses to grant to the Palestinians that which Israel demands for itself, a right to exist. Now, I think Israel does have a right to exist. They're a fact on the ground. I also think the Palestinians have a right to exist. And why we can't find anybody in the government of Israel who is willing to let go of this idea that they should have it all and the Palestinians should have none, because that is just not going to happen. And they're caught up in this biblical mythology that God wants them to have all of the land from the Tigris to the Euphrates, from the Nile to the Euphrates, because it's in the Bible. That's what Israel is holding out for. And you know something, all of that stuff in the Bible was written thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago, and it is outdated, and I'm sorry. The earth doesn't rest on pillars, okay? And it's time to let some of that stuff go as a guide for going into the third millennium. It really, really is. And, you know, Mark Twain used to say these wonderfully cogent observations about the nature of war and religion. So did George Carlin. And boy, do we miss him now. But it really is nonsense. I mean, throughout history, Christians and Jews and Muslims have been able to live in peace and carry on commerce and get along just fine. But you just get these hysterical, hallucinated, fanatical leaders who are hearing these voices in their head that they ascribe to an immortal being who lives in the clouds and talks to nobody else but them, saying, God wants you to have this particular piece of real estate. And over on the other side, their little voices in their head are saying, no, God wants you to have this little piece of real estate. And then they got the popes up in Italy and in France, and the little voices in their head are saying, no, God wants you to liberate the Holy Land. And it just goes on and on and on and on. We could all live in peace if it weren't for all these guys listening to these voices in their head that they think is God and whipping us all up into a frenzy. We can all get along just fine. It's politicians who set us one against the other in order to keep us controlled. And at some point, I think the population of the world is going to stand up and say, enough with the fairy tales. There is no God up there, certainly not one who goads us into killing each other off for his own personal amusement. Or if there is a God up there, you know, he's got basically the mentality of a small child who likes to goad ants into fighting each other. And who needs to worship something like that? We can all get along. Jews, Palestinians, Arabs, Christians, Africans, Chinese, everybody. We can get along. It's the political and religious leaders that set us at each other out of greed and ambition and ego. The desire to stand on top of a pyramid erected to one's own vanity and say, I am king of a bigger chunk of the earth than you are. And, I'm watching what's going on in Israel right now. It is very clear to me that Israel's leadership has absolutely no tolerance for Palestinians. They're trying to find some way they can justify simply scraping out Gaza and what's left of the West Bank and say, okay, this is now Israel. It's all Israel. The Palestinians have to go someplace else. And as soon as that's done, Israel's going to start looking at those other countries that are between the Nile and the Euphrates. And they're going to start saying, okay, how do we get those? Because that is God's master plan for we, the Jewish people. Which is amazing when you consider that most of the people living in Israel now aren't descendants of the biblical Israelites. They're descendants of converted Khazars. It's the Palestinians who are the descendants of the biblical Israelites. Talk about an incredible historical irony there. Anyway, Thomas, I've ranted on long enough. We've only got about 3 minutes left to this segment. What would you like to wrap up on?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I'm a believer, okay? And when I talk to God, I call that prayer. But when God talks to me, I call that schizoaffective psychosis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I don't have a problem if you want to believe in God and this person over here wants to believe in the flying spaghetti monster and this person over here believes in the giant hairy muffin. I don't care, I'm not concerned about your personal beliefs and I'm not strongly motivated to go out and throw you on the rack or burn you at the stake because you don't see the world the way that I do. But I think all of these guys in the funny looking robes and hats, when they're not molesting the choir boys and they're up there screaming, God wants you to go forth and kill in his infinite mercy. I think that is a pretty destructive aspect of our society. And it's kind of interesting. A study came out a few days ago. We reported it at whatreallyhappened.com, where they did a survey of people in the United States who approved of torture and didn't approve. And they found something which, in hindsight, isn't all that surprising. The more Christian a respondent to the survey was, the more likely it was they were to approve of the use of torture.
I think that was the churchgoers, but you have to remember Jesus said, don't go to church, go into your chamber and pray to your heavenly Father in secret.
Well, that's why they nailed him to the cross. He was cutting into the prophets. He was cutting into the prophets there. All right, Thomas, we got to let you go. We got to take a break here for news and commercials. We'll be back in about 6 minutes. Until then, aloha, America. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. We're going to go right to the phones. We've got Leo in Massachusetts. Aloha, Leo. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Thank you for taking my call. I heard you on Mark Glenn earlier, and I wanted to get back to you because I finally figured out why we just don't get it. We're playing it straight. You see, we're telling the truth, and that's where our main problem is. And I'll explain that in so much as what I really envision seeing, because we're part of this large think tank, and we're not thinking. Now, these two guys are going to get off, and Harmon's not going to be prosecuted. So what we should do is immediately form groups, and we'll call ourselves Jews and American Zionists against treason laws, you see. And we should help the ADL and AIPAC to run back the treason laws and get rid of them, because this is what's happening, you see. And you see the brilliance of this, don't you?
Oh, I absolutely, because you can go right in there and say, you know, that these laws are anti-Semitic, because look at how many Israeli spies are being arrested all the time. Clearly there's a racial bias at work there.
Yes, you see, we're missing the boat here on this game. We're playing it straight. And when I tell Mark Glenn that, he starts referring to how I commented about the Pope and the Nazis. You know, he brings up a spurious issue. I'm really worried about Glenn and that bunch. I think they're vilifying Jews to the point where it's not vilifying Zionism. They're vilifying Judaism per se, which is where they want us to do. The Zionists want us to vilify Judaism.
Well, you know, we have to walk a very, very fine line there, because the reality is that, contrary to the propaganda we're getting from Israel, the world's Jewish people don't always support what Israel does. And
I know that.
Okay, let me complete the thought. We cannot hold Jewish people in general responsible for the crimes of Israel's government any more than we can hold your ordinary American man in the street responsible for the crimes of the U.S. government, especially as unresponsive as they've become, nor can we hold ordinary Muslims responsible for the crimes of Al-Qaeda, whoever they ultimately turn out to actually be.
Yeah, and the thing is this, we're playing it straight. That's why we're missing the boat, because if we started playing it on the level that they're playing, we get down in the dirt and muck with them, and we're not mucking. We don't know how to muck. I mean, the pontificates sing to the choir, but the choir doesn't know how to sing to the people. And I brought it out specifically because I was at a place when there were like young white people from 25 to 35, and I asked them. They were helping out at a food pantry, and I said to them, when they were all lined up, I said, "Oh, how many of you are familiar with the Baxter flu releasing a live flu virus that ended up killing three ferrets, the ferrets in Czechoslovakia, and that was sent to 14 countries? One out of 10 pulled out his PDA and said, "Oh, yeah, I saw that on Bloomberg." That was the bad part. You know what the horrifying part was?
What was?
The horrifying part was that nobody cared enough to, even after it's been proven true, that they didn't care to say, "Hey, what's this about?" I mean, isn't that horrifying? Like, you're talking to a bunch of marshmallows.
Well, you know, we're sort of conditioned what we're supposed to be interested in by the corporate media. We're supposed to be worried about the love lives of the movie stars. I mean, if you go through any supermarket checkout counter and you look at the tabloids there, that's what people are being taught is important. And unfortunately, they grow up with it. They grow up in schools which don't really teach you how to look at history as cause and effect, but only simply memorizing a bunch of names and places and dates. So we really are dumbed down for almost from birth. And we do. We spend our lives worrying about, you know, which Hollywood celebrity is sleeping with which Hollywood celebrity, as if that really mattered. And, you know, it really is an issue. Leo, we got to let you go.
Can I ask you one question?
Real quick.
If we get this type of a program going nationwide, where people set up on a Saturday afternoon and do what I was talking about, they will be on the run, because they can't attack you for it, because it's real. You see, they won't come out of the woodwork and say, "Oh, they're lying." And then people say, "Well, why are they lying?" You see, we have them trapped, and we don't know how to corner them.
It'll be worth that. Leo, we got to let you go, okay? Thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to switch over to Richard in France. Aloha, Richard. Bonjour, mon ami. Comment vas-tu?
Yeah, bonsoir, monsieur. Hey, look, Mike, my post here, or it isn't a post, I just wanted to call and say how fun it is to post articles on your website.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get up in the morning and I know I can get, I can maybe post five of these dogs, and I search my, I look around, and there are other guys there. There's Easterling and Deb Don and everybody else. And I'm looking around and I'm saying to myself, this is the great find. It's like we're hunting for big game. And you know, over there on the far right corner of your site there, it says the most voted, highest rated stories. Oh man, that's the big game. And so I just call to say how fun it is to be a part of the big game hunting society looking for the greatest story on the internet.
Well, you know, it is an information jungle out there, and yes, that's a big part of it, is going out and finding what is really the news, especially when there's so much being thrown out there that really isn't news, as I was saying to the last caller there. And so, yeah, the little voting bar over there on the right is, you know, that is the province of the other members and readers to basically say, this is what's important. And I'm glad that you enjoy it as fun, but it is still very, very important work, and what really happened has always been a community effort. I take a great deal of inspiration and direction and focus from the members, from ordinary readers who email me stories and say, this is what I think is important and needs to get out there. And we do get that out there as well. And it's probably for this reason, and it's not just what really happened, it's kind of the internet as a whole and the alternative media as a whole, where the audience gets to decide for themselves what they think is the important story, rather than have some very highly paid corporate executive say this. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. We had a momentary technical glitch there. I guess we're still not quite out of the woods with the power failure that we had here. So, anyways, I was saying thank you, Richard, and thank you all the members of What Really Happened, because it is a community, and you do add a tremendous amount to the content of the site and direct that. All right, I'm going to start wandering far afield. I'm hearing in the chat room that people are getting tired of hearing about AIPAC and Israeli spies and flu and the rest of it. So we're going to go on to some other things. Although I do have one more flu story. The BBC just came out with an article today admitting that the flu death toll is less than feared. It was a great deal of nothing. It was the government crying wolf, the media crying wolf. Look over there, flu, flu, flu. Meanwhile, as I mentioned in the last hour, we're getting a report that Israel has once again gone into Gaza and is... okay. All right, we're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cat.
Acadia Public Radio.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. What a crazy day between blackouts and data dropouts and the rest of it. But I think we're back on track here. Going to talk about some stories. We're going to get away from flu, and I've got one story to wrap up on that we were just starting in when we went to break. The BBC has just come out with a story basically admitting that the swine flu is not the horror we were all being told it was only a week ago. And what is interesting is, I'm sure that the corporate media and the various government agencies who have egg on their face right now are going to say, well, better safe than sorry, and actually we acted fast enough and we defeated this thing and so forth and so on. And I guess it's going to be really embarrassing for all of these major news magazines who've already gone to press with next month's issue of the magazine with headlines screaming flu and end of the world and all of that happened. The interesting thing, however, is that from a purely epidemiological point of view, it was kind of obvious almost on day two, day three, that this was not having the kind of explosive infection rates that we saw in 1918. And it was at that point that a lot of bloggers and alternative media hosts, including yours truly, started saying, wait a minute, this is not the story they're telling us it is. And they're still trying to, hype up with all the people who've got the disease and the people who've died from it. And I don't mean to trivialize their suffering and their loss, but it's not a lot of people. And yet they're still pounding and hyping this thing. Thursday, Fox News was out there saying, if we go to phase six, it'll mean martial law and the suspension of the Constitution, and you'd better be ready to give up some of your civil rights for the greater good, and so forth and so on. So anyway, all right, moving on to some other stories. Coming out of New York, rather interesting little story, where the New York Police Department has started a stop-and-frisk program in certain neighborhoods of the city. Which basically means when you're just walking along the sidewalk, minding your own business, the police can walk up to you and say, we'd like to check you out. And it's not a question, of course. And they frisk you to make sure you're not carrying a gun or whatever it is they're looking for. Drugs, I presume, or maybe you've got a stolen DVD player tucked into your back pocket or something like that. Obviously very unconstitutional. No probable cause, no warrant, just you. Up against the wall, we're going to frisk you. And this issue is being bandied about the media as one of, are they racial profiling or not? And obviously nobody wants to be racially profiled, whether you're black or Hispanic or Muslim or whatever. But this idea about whether it's racial profiling or not is a distraction. Because the real issue is, are the police really supposed to be able to do this kind of thing under the Constitution of the United States of America? This whole idea that you can be stopped at random for no reason at all and get a pat down. And it's just one more indication that the United States of America is being transformed into something very un-American. We are being transformed into a police state. Now, during the break, actually two breaks ago, I got an email sent in to me from somebody who has pointed out that, at least in her neighborhood, we're starting to see the posters go up in supermarkets and in libraries and in public buildings, reminding young men age 18 to 25 that they must register for the draft. And I'm wondering why these signs are going up right now. What is Obama planning to do? What is the U.S. government planning to do? And I think it's pretty obvious. We were talking about this in the first hour. This whole Harmon thing and the Apex spies. We know Israel wants a war with Iran. We may have just dodged the initial attack to it. But whatever happens, it's clear the U.S. is trying to go back to a war economy. And, you know, the wrong people, you know, and we're just, we're turning into this monster nation where our people are frisked by the cops in the streets. Our government tortures people. We're invading countries without real good reason. Who can support this? This is not the United States of America that I knew. Okay. This last week, while all of us were scared of swine flu, Al Gore was in front of the Congress reminding us all of the dangers of global warming and that all global warming is inevitably the cause of you icky-poo human beings because you exhale carbon dioxide and you pass methane in the middle of the night. And you will atone by paying a carbon tax. And I, Al Gore, will become insanely rich brokering carbon tax credits. Little factoid here. When Al Gore ended his career in public life, he was worth an estimated $2 million, which is not too bad. He's now estimated to be worth about $100 million. And he's made most of that money basically off of all of this fear-mongering of global warming, human-caused global warming. And yet the reality is the Earth is in the, you know, we're like 5 years into a cooling trend. And now we're getting word that there has been, in the month of May, a hard freeze in the Midwest of the United States. Oklahoma has apparently lost almost 90% of their grain crop, which means sky-high food prices are coming up. And I think it betrays the absurdity where even as you and I look out our windows and we look at our thermometers and we realize we're colder this year than we have been, that Al Gore can go before the Congress and say, humans are making the planet get warmer and we must tax them for it. And I'll share all the wealth with all of you who voted through this carbon cap and tax credit system. And the Congress, the same Congress that sells your children to Israel for their wars, is lining up behind to pass this thing. Because they're all going to be investors in this huge commercial venture. They're all going to get rich. And meanwhile, every American household will have to pay an additional $4,000 every year because of the increased tax costs on their automotive fuels, their food, pretty much anything that can be deemed to be adding to global warming will have a new tax added to it. And Al Gore owns a company, and by the way, Ken Lay helped set this whole thing up. And Ken Lay, you know, was famous for Enron, basically creating a crisis that didn't exist, in this case, California's electricity shortage, and reaping billions of dollars in profits from it. So now Al Gore has created a crisis. Climate change is the enemy of the world. And he's making a fortune out of it. And it's a scam, and the Congress is probably going to go along with it. All right, we're going to take another break here. When we come back, please join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231, and we will be right back.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here, and things seem to be smoothing out on the technical side here. We've got callers on the line. We're going to go to Jeff in Washington on the subject of global warming.
Yeah,
Aloha,
hey,
Jeff.
How are you? Listen, I wanted to say that the 2007-2008 winter here was one of the coldest on record. We had snowdrifts across major highways. I was shut down for over 10 days, could not leave my house. And then the 2008-2009 winter we just had broke all those records. I had to dig out of my house a snowdrift against my front door that was over 5 feet high. I have lived in this area my whole life, 52 years, and never have I seen anything like it, ever.
What part of Washington do you live in?
I live right against the Idaho line out here in the wheat fields.
I know exactly where you are. I used to live in North Bend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just south of Spokane, Washington.
Yeah, I know exactly where you are. But, you know, we're getting this all over. I've got family in New Hampshire, and they're saying the same thing. It was a really rough winter. It was it took a long time for the snow to go away here. Now we're hearing this report about there's been another cold snap in Oklahoma. You know, the hard reality of what's going on in the world, you know, it's really very stark. It is getting colder. In fact, interestingly enough, National Geographic was running a show last night about are we at the dawn of a new little ice age? And, you know, the global warming cult is still trying to find some way they can say this is all a human's fault. You know, we're finally seeing reports that in actuality, contrary to the claims of the global warming cult, the Antarctic ice cap is actually expanding. And so Al Gore and his people turn around and say, well, that's still human's fault because of the ozone hole. So you're still to blame. And, it, you know, they're not really dealing with the science. It's all about selling this cap and tax agenda so they can make money off of something that really doesn't exist in the first place.
Well, they're doing it. They're doing
well,
it too.
Yeah, they really are. But the reality is, you know, this is how government works. They create a crisis and sell you the solution. And this is a classic case. They're trying to turn climate change into some kind of an emergency. But the truth is the climate's always changing. It's always getting warmer or colder or warmer or colder. And it never stays the same.
It's arrogance to think that we can lock it in where we want it.
That's exactly right. That's the unnatural aspect. That's the artificial aspect, is saying that we can somehow lock it. And, you know, if you go back to Michael Crichton, he had this wonderful book, The State of Fear. And in it was a description of the history of Yellowstone Park, which is excerpted from one of his speeches about chaos theory and the environment. And he's absolutely bang spot on. If you look at the history of Yellowstone Park, it has been one ecological disaster after the other after the other. And you can't blame evil corporations on it because Yellowstone was butchered by so-called environmentalists and park management people with the very, very best of intentions and no real understanding of the dynamics of the system. We've had out here in Hawaii, you know, the state spends a lot of money on attempting to preserve and manage our environment, whatever that means. We had this silly thing a few years back over on the eastern side of the island. We had this little tiny island off the coast there, and locals call it the Island of the Plastic Birds because they covered this island with these plastic models of this endangered species, and the idea was that it was going to lure the real ones down there and encourage them to nest and grow the population. And it turned out the plastic birds scared the real ones away, so that one kind of blew up in their faces, and they've taken the plastic models down there. But it was just one of those absurd things. A lot of people get out there, and they've got really good sound bites and really good public relations, but they don't really understand what they're doing, and it keeps blowing up in their face. The thing with ethanol, and now, you know, they're trying to sell global warming as the world gets colder. They're trying to figure some way they can say, okay, the world feels like it's getting warmer or getting colder because we did X, Y, Z. And they just keep constructing these more and more absurd rationales why, regardless of what's happening to planet Earth, it's the fault of humans who should be taxed for it.
Yeah, it's back to the same old saying. You know, it's hard to remember. The main objective was to drain the swamp when you're butt deep in alligators.
Yeah, it really is. But again, it isn't really. They're not even trying to drain the swamp. They're just trying to get the money. They're rainmakers. They're the modern incarnation of the rainmakers. They're going to take a bunch of money from us to save the world, and then they're going to ride off, and we're going to stand around saying, "Did we really get anything for all that we did there?" Jeff, we got to let you go. We got another caller on the line who's been waiting patiently, so we're going to switch over to Kurt in Ohio. Aloha, Kurt. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hello, Mike. I just, since I've been listening for my original topic, I just thought I'd mention to you that I work for a large environmental company, and both my boss and I We have a whole greenhouse gas and global warming division, and we won't market it.
Okay.
We won't talk to anybody about it. My boss calls it bad science. I go a little further and call it fraud, but I just thought I'd mention that since that was on topic. But back to what I was hearing a lot of last week, mainly from Alex Jones, Stephen Quayle, and the like that, talking about this swine flu that's coming up that's actually a combination of avian swine and human flu. But there was talk of a second release coming in July. People mm-hmm. tied that into Henry Kissinger's statement that there would be no gun ownership after September of this year. And there was speculation that either a real or fabricated flu epidemic in July would be the call for the level six or whatever levels that they have that would be used for gun confiscation. Have you heard anything about that? Do you know anything more about that than what I've heard?
Well, I've been hearing a lot of stuff along that line, but if the current flu was intended as a device to scare us into agreeing to martial law, it has definitely fizzled. And it may have been a case that, and I'm no longer subscribing to the theory that this was intentionally manufactured and released. I think somebody just grabbed something that was out there and said, let's make this the big story. But hypothetically, to go along with what you're saying, if somebody had made this and released it, it's obviously not generating the kinds of infections and deaths that would justify the story. And so, in other words, it's a failure. Now, if somebody is planning on releasing something in July that is going to make us all so sick that we will run screaming to Big Daddy government to save us one more time. You know, it's kind of hard to say, how do we get from the fact that I'm sneezing and coughing and all of that to I must surrender my guns? I'm not seeing a link there, and I think probably most Americans would say, what has one got to do with the other? I'm not going to be given my free shot of Tamiflu unless I turn in my weapon. You know, that I don't think is going to go over very well with a lot of Americans. They're going to say this is a very obvious scam to scare us out of our right to say no to the government.
The other conjecture, and that's kind of what, you know, possibly what it is. I don't know. The people who were talking about this, they're pretty credible, you know. But the other conjecture was that this flu is one that will sit latent and then react with one that would be, you know, put in the air, an avian-type flu that would be put in the air and contracted and react with this one that is sitting latent in people. Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't, and I'm just trying to think about how that would actually work. I mean, obviously, that's the story about how these flus mutate, is you'll have more than one flu sitting inside a host, and they'll recombine. But it's kind of hard to guarantee that that's going to happen. I can't rule it out, but at this point I'd have to say I need to study the issue a little bit more to see if it's really practical. And the danger with that is, you know, if somebody brought that idea to me and said, let's do it, I'd say the problem is we can't predict how they're going to interact inside the host body. We could inadvertently come up with a mutation that is so lethal that it's going to basically come back and attack everybody, including who we consider to be the good guys. I'm more inclined to believe in an ethnically sensitive virus that doesn't recombine, and we've heard a lot of R&D about that over the last few years. Hang on, Kurt. We're going to keep you through the commercial break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
Which means they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And
call
aloha.
Right now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
What a day I'm having. Oh, my goodness. And I'm not trying to make excuses, but the electricity went out in the middle of the night last night, and my day job involves computer animation, so all of my rendering servers went down and just everything just came apart, and I'm still trying. After this radio show, I have another project that I have to go out and get taken care of, and it's in a mess because its stuff didn't complete last night. So it's one of those days, and I apologize for the show just being scattered and all the rest of it, but we're doing the best that we can out here. I presume Kurt is still out there on the phone. We're talking about the flu. Kurt, you still there, and what else is on your mind?
Yeah, I'm still here. Just something else I wanted to mention. I realize this is a little bit off topic, but there was an author that I would suggest for anybody to read. I picked it up from Tex Mars. The author's name is Michael Hoffman. He wrote a book called Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare. I would recommend it to everybody to read because the degree of understanding from when I get when I listen to folks like yourself, who I consider like with the gift of information, the degree of understanding that I have when I receive that information, having read the work of Michael Hoffman, is 2-3-fold from what it was before I read his work.
Well, okay, and but this whole thing about secret societies, and of course, right now we've got another Dan Brown book coming out as a film, Angels and Demons. And people, you know, are very attracted to the romantic notion of secret society. But at the same time, yeah, there are societies out there that are secret. Virtually every political party in history began as more or less at least a confidential party. Sometimes the idea about secrecy is very overblown, like some of the hysteria you see attached to the Freemasons right now. But we know for a fact, yeah, there are secret clandestine meetings and there are conspiracies. Jane Harmon just proved that to us once again, and people are always trying to find out what's going on. You know, if somebody's having a conspiracy on how to, cheat on somebody else's spouse or that stuff, I don't give a care. But when we have situations like Jane Harmon and they're making deals contrary to the interest of the United States people, that is something that we do need to find out, and we do need to be aware that these things go on and understand this is how they operate. One of our other callers was talking about we're trying to play things straight, and that is absolutely true. We are all raised to tell the truth, to be honest, to be honorable, to play fair and think, you know, everybody is supposed to share and we all get along together. And that is all fine, except that because we're raised that way, we expect others to be equally truthful and honest and honorable and fair with us. And we don't get that from the government.
No, absolutely not. And what he really gets into, and the title may be a little bit misleading, but really what it is an expose on the methodologies of social engineering, how you're deceived. And it gets into pretty much the mechanics of exactly what you were just talking about.
Okay. Well, no, definitely with that part. There is a lot of deception. I mean, if there's one insight the American people have at this time in history, it's that we're the most lied to people on the face of the earth. As far as social engineering, I think much of that has actually failed and will continue to fail because the whole social engineering concept rested on Margaret Mead's book, Coming of Age in Samoa, which we know now was a complete hoax. And her conclusions were wrong. She didn't check her facts and assumptions that she went down there to find proof for a pre-desired outcome. And so she saw what she wanted to see, and she came back and declared this whole new revolution in social engineering based on what she found in Samoa, except that she didn't really find it. And so a huge underpinning of the liberal political philosophy is that you can re-engineer the human mind by re-engineering the environment and society around them. It hasn't been working. It, in fact, is causing far more problems than it solves. And yet so many academic careers and political careers rest on this assumption They don't want to let go of it. They attack anybody who dares speak heresy to their patron saint of social engineering. And, you know, it's like people in the Middle Ages who had made their whole careers on epicycles and the geocentric solar system, which was more than just simply the church. And then Galileo and Copernicus come along and say, no, the sun is at the center of the solar system. And they didn't want to let go of the old system because their whole reputation, their self-image, everything was based on the old system of beliefs. And so we're seeing a little bit of a social revolution here right now. And I think this idea of social engineering, I think its days are very much numbered because it isn't working so far. A lot of the propaganda we're seeing coming out of the government to try and push us in a certain direction is based on concepts of social engineering, and it's not working, and they're scratching their heads and wondering why it isn't working, and they're blaming the internet, and they're blaming alternative media, but their primary assumption is deeply, deeply flawed, and that's why it's not working the way all the experts keep insisting it will.
Well, there's only so long that people can be told that 2 + 2 = 5 before they eventually just say, No, 2 + 2 = 4.
Yeah, absolutely correct. All right, we're going to let you go here, Kurt. We've got another caller on the line, and we're going to switch over to Joe in New Hampshire. Aloha, Joe. What part of New Hampshire are you calling from?
I was from Hampton area.
Okay, know it well. You know where Loudoun is, right?
Absolutely. I've talked to you before.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Okay, Joe, what's on your mind today?
Okay, I used to work in the renewable energy business up in Maine. And I did write a book for the state of Maine regarding alternative energy back in 1997. Part of my research included contacting a company by the name of Cantor Fitzgerald,
who
was pioneering renewable energy credit trading at the time. Okay, it looked like they were really going to move along with it, including carbon tax credits and whatnot.
Yes.
Their location was One World Trade Center, and the company was located about 6 floors above where the plane hit. That was the end of the company. They did have an affiliate out in London, and if you check the name, our company name, Cantor Fitzgerald, you will notice that they're really moving strongly in this area of renewable energy, credits trading, tax caps, et cetera. And I feel it's important because it was 1997 when they started pioneering this, and then it got shut down for quite a few years, and now it's back up. Point number two, if there is indeed global cooling, then Al Gore, he's just going to say, you know, guys, you're right, it's actually cooling. But in the meantime, everyone's going to be using more fuel oil, more wood for heating, coal for electricity and whatnot. And he's going to really make up like a bandit.
Yeah, the bottom line is because, you know, it's like this wonderful movie called Trading Places with Eddie Murphy. And there's this wonderful scene where these two commodities brokers are trying to explain their business to him. And they're saying, you know, sometimes our clients make money and sometimes our clients lose money. But regardless of whether they make or lose money, we get the commissions. And the Eddie Murphy character looks up and says, oh, you guys are a couple of bookies. And the broker says, I told you he'd understand. And it's the same thing with Al Gore. It doesn't matter which way the carbon credits are going. He will make the commissions off the deal, and he will become very rich. He's going to Enronize carbon dioxide the way Ken Lay Enronized electricity. It's the same scam all over again, and there's a huge amount of money to be made. And Al Gore's company and his other investors' company, they have already made a huge fortune in Europe where they've already ramrodded this thing through. And they've become very rich, and yet nobody can point to any evidence that this trading scheme has in any way improved the environment at all. It's just a way to make money off of a product that was invented out of thin air.
You're absolutely correct.
Okay. Anything else, Joe?
That'll be it, Mike. Appreciate
your
time.
All right. Thanks an awful lot, Joe, and please call in again. We're almost to the end of our show. Boy, oh boy, what a wild one. Thank goodness for my loving wife, Claire, who's plugging wires together in the background and getting coffee and all the rest of it. It's just been a crazy, crazy show here. So my apologies for the less than normal polished presentation here. Okay, we're at the end of the show. Thank goodness we got through this one. We'll be back Monday, of course, 5 p.m. Central Time here on the Genesis Communication Network. We're going to be keeping an eye on the various stories, the torture, the coal freeze. This is apparently going to really send our food prices right through the roof. And I think Al Gore ought to pay for all of it after all his screaming about global warming. And we're seeing freezing in Oklahoma in May. All right, that's it for our show. Stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive very, very, very carefully, and aloha, America.